Today I'd like to welcome Jane to the Real Nurse Stories podcast. Jane is a nurse manager who works in a metro hospital in Western Australia. Hi Jane, and welcome to today's podcast.
Thank you Eva, and on a very hot day here in Perth, I'm very happy to be in the cool with you.
Thank you, and it's good to have you here. So Jane, I'd like you just to start, if you don't mind, just telling me a little bit about what made you decide to become a nurse.
Well, in actual fact, Eva, I didn't want to be a nurse. I wanted to be in the police force. But when I got to a certain age, I realised that the extra height is that I wasn't going to achieve. And back in the day in England, you had to be a certain height to be a police officer. So I fell a couple of inches short. So unfortunately, I was unable to go down that pathway. So the other thing that I looked at was that I was very keen on the army or the navy or something very active and, you know, full of energy and engaging. And that's what I really wanted to do. But then as I got just a little bit older, a couple of years later, I decided that probably that wasn't for me. And then I started looking at social working. And social working, why? Because it seemed like back in the day, it seemed like quite a hippie thing to do. I just remember social workers having long flowing skirts and being travellers and hippies. And I thought, oh, that's kind of like, you know, I wouldn't mind doing something like that. But aside from that, I also had a strong sense of justice and purpose and caring for people. And I guess I was always the person at school and even friends' mums used to chat to me about problems and issues. And I used to spend hours talking through things with them. So there was always this part of me that was very social and caring. And then when I was about, I think I was about 17 or 18, my father was in hospital. And we were chatting and I was visiting him in hospital one day and my dad was saying to me, you know, well, why don't you become a nurse? Because I was still at that crossroads. And I remember very clearly and very distinctly turning around and saying to him, oh, no, I don't want to become a nurse because all I'm going to be doing is emptying bedpans. That's all I'm going to do. And I don't want to do that. However, as all little girls and their fathers, we're always the apple in our father's eye. And gradually the idea developed and I thought, actually, yes, I wouldn't mind being a nurse. And as I used to go in and visit my dad over that week when he was in hospital and he was having surgery, I thought, wow, actually, there is a little bit more to nursing than, you know, just emptying bedpans and urine bottles and cleaning people up and everything. So, yeah, I saw how they engaged with him and I wanted to be a part of that. So that's how it triggered me to become a nurse. So it was the seed that my father planted. And so that's how I took that pathway.
And what was it, obviously, when your dad was in hospital, that changed your perception of nursing? What was it, do you think, that changed? Was it, you know, what you saw nurses doing? Or what was it that kind of made you rethink that?
I think just sat there looking around and seeing how the nurses were engaging with other patients, seeing how vulnerable they were and how much they needed a person to come across and link to and support. I think it was the vulnerability and how important that was to care for them, I think, was the main thing. And also, I think naturally, without me realising, when I was in hospital, you know, patients were asking for things, calling bells, and I would automatically get up and do stuff, obviously not give their IV antibiotics and medicines and things like that. But, you know, it just seemed a very natural, easy thing for me to do. And I think it was, yeah, definitely gauging and seeing what they're doing. You know, they were doing dressings, they were doing medications, they were giving IV antibiotics. They weren't just, you know, bringing bedpans and giving them to the patient. So, yeah.
Where did you do your nurse training?
I did my nurse training in Cornwall at the Royal Cornwall Hospital, Trelisk. And I always say it's where I grew up. It's one of my places that I grew up, yeah. So spent a lot of I started when I was about 19. So, yeah, in Cornwall, in England. For those of you that don't know where Cornwall is, the land of pasties and clotted cream, it's for sure. Yeah.
And why did you choose that particular hospital?
Because it's the only one that would take me. I applied for so I applied for several hospitals, and I applied for Plymouth, I applied for Bristol, and I applied to Cornwall. And my first interview was at Bristol, which was where I was originally born, and we moved to Cornwall when I was about 10 years old. And they I wasn't accepted, and the reason I was accepted is because I didn't have my O level in maths. I only had a, for those of you that know CSE, I only had a very low CSE in maths. All my social qualifications were quite high, like sociology and things like that. So I had the O levels in that, but not in maths. So then I went to Plymouth, and Plymouth said that they would accept me if I resat a maths exam, and would come back and prove that I could do maths. And then the next one interview I had was in Cornwall, and I had the interview, and I remember at the interview they said to me, "Why should we give you a position as a student nurse here? What is it that we should do to give that to you? Because we're looking at your exams and we're seeing that your maths isn't that great, you know, and there are other candidates that's come in that's got higher grades." And I just sat there and I paused for a moment, and even at a very young age, I just looked up and I said, "All I can say to you is this, is that I worked very hard to get those exam results, and that I will always work hard to achieve what I need to achieve." And that's it. And they went really good. And I remember they just smiled and they paused and they carried on the interview. And then afterwards, the lady that interviewed me, when I heard that I got in, she came and had a chat, and she said, "That was what got you in. You said the right thing at the right time, that you would have worked really hard, whatever. And we could see that you'd worked hard at what you got, and we could see that you would be really committed, and just try and achieve what you could achieve." So, yeah.
Did you enjoy your nurse
I
training?
loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it. Loved it. Had a wonderful time. Just, I think for me, the training, well, it was the first time I left home for a start. So my social life went absolutely skyrocketed. As with all of us as young student nurses, we had a wonderful social life, engaging and going out doing things. We had lots of trials and tribulations. You know, our first bed bath, our first, sad things like death and all those. So there's lots of trials and tribulations. And probably to note at an early stage, lots of discussions about what we'd all gone through. So there was a lot of camaraderie, and probably the early stages of what we would say now is reflection. You know, talking about how we're feeling about it and how we were coping and everything. So I definitely enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy the study so much, to be honest. I found that sometimes I just couldn't get a tutor that I could engage with that would captivate me enough to teach the actual agenda of what we were doing. So that was difficult sometimes, but I loved my training for sure.
What did you want to specialise in when you finished your training? Because often I know I've talked to quite a lot of grads, and that's always kind of, they always have a very, usually it's ICU or ED or the high care, critical care kind of environments that people seem to aspire to on finishing the training. But I'm just intrigued to know, what did you know where you wanted to work when you finished your training?
No, I think a lot of people had a lot of thoughts of where they thought I could go. So I had, I had tutors say, "Oh, look, you would be good in ED, or you would be good in mental health. I could see you as a mental health nurse," which I always wondered why, but anyway. The other one was paediatrics, children's nursing. So definitely there was a strong focus for that when I did that placement. So back in England with the old ward training, so obviously we do a couple of months on each ward, and certainly I was pulled very strongly towards the children's ward. Did very well on that ward and I really enjoyed it. At the end of that module, we had a conversation with our tutor at the end of each module, and they basically said, "I think you found your forte. I think this is you. This is what you should be doing." And I was a second year student nurse, and I just remember at that stage I looked up and I said, I can't do it, because I just feel, I felt too emotionally involved and broken. I felt that I couldn't detach or do my job and go home with children. It pulled on my heartstrings too much. So probably if I had to say one thing that I was most strongly attracted to do, would have been children's nursing, but I shied away from it because I just felt that I wouldn't be able to do that long term or manage it at that age, at that stage. But there wasn't anything that I particularly wanted to specialise in. I was enjoying everything that I was doing.
You mentioned in your answers, your questionnaire form, that you had a particularly challenging time in your second year as a student nurse. Can you just tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. So in Cornwall, where we were, we had different, so we had the main hospital, and then we would go to other sites. So for example, mental health would be in another hospital, gynae and obstetrics was in another hospital as well. So part of my second year placement was gynae and obstetrics ward. I was working on the ward as a second year student nurse. It was my last placement in that year, and I was basically working on the ward, and I basically what could have been only described as a personality clash with a Chilean nurse, who took umbrance to me, who from the onset really clearly did not like me, was quite rude, was very offhand. And we were in a situation where part of that module was assessing aseptic technique and dressings and everything. And we had a patient that came in that had come back post-surgery, and at that stage they had vaginal packs in, so there was vaginal packs that were put in. And we then had to remove them so many days post-op, but then they would be discharged and they would go home. Anyway, so this particular incident, I was in the situation where I was doing this procedure, being overseen by her. She was getting quite angsty and nasty and telling me to hurry up. The patient felt very uncomfortable as well, but, you know, we did it, and she signed me off as only just passed. And then a couple of months later, we had a scenario where I was called in by the director of nursing, and this lady had only had one pack removed. There was actually two packs, and this particular nurse had blamed me and said it was my fault. You know, I'd gone off and done it on my own, and it was just awful. So I had 3 months in that area, was on the ward for the month. She continued to be bullying, intimidating, you know, can you do this or you can't do that, just demeaning. Followed on from that, I then had my second month, which was in the which was in theatre. And there was an enrolled nurse, unfortunately, who also took umbrance to me and took a dislike. Whether the two were friends or linked, I never knew. And I just remember that she said to me, can you run an IV through? And I went, yep, sure. So I took the IV bag and I got the IV line. I forgot to turn it off at the, you know, the barrel, and just hung it up and it just flowed through. And of course, there was multitude of bubbles. And I remember her pulling it off me going, you can't even run an IV line through. And I think those words, and I'm glad I had that experience, because those words have continued to stay with me through my whole career about how I felt about it. That was the setting for the rest of the month of my time in surgery, for gynae surgery. And she was continually demeaning, rude, and would continually say things like that. So unfortunately, the two experiences tallied on to each other. It did get flagged and it was noted. I remember I went in to do a week in recovery, and the nurse was a lovely Scottish nurse, and she said, Jane, you're shaking. Why do you keep shaking when this nurse comes in? And she said, is she bullying you? And I remember she said, is she bullying you? And I said, I think so. I'm not sure. And she said, no, that can't happen. So she very much took me under her wing. But nobody really did anything. Unfortunately, after 2 months there, I got quite sick. I got gastritis due to stress. I remember in the nurses' quarters, on the floor, rolling around in pain. And it was basically stress. I was stressed to the hill. I was shaking when they walked in. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. I felt very trapped. And then eventually I actually left. And then that inquiry come up over the couple of months. It was just another, it was a blame, that blame, escapism, blame somebody else. But I never got, luckily the patient said no, not at all. She'd also discussed about how appalled she was at the way that I got spoken to. And the nurse manager at the time, who I can remember her name and exactly what she looked like, and she just said, "I'm so sorry you went through this experience." And even as a youngster then, I just looked up and I said, "Please don't let anybody else go through this." So look, 3 months, 3 months of bullying, 3 months of hell. People recognized it. Very few people interacted. A few key words, and I definitely ended up in hospital with gastritis due to stress. Very painful. Ironically enough, what I will say to you, and what to me reflected of that, people don't realise their behaviour is that a couple of years later, I was at the bus stop waiting to go into the city, and she pulled over and offered me a lift. She said, "Oh, hi, Jane, how are you? Can I give you a lift into the city?" So I think again, at the very early stages, my process in my head was identifying these things and seeing the disconnect that people just don't, and they're behaving badly, but then almost disassociate it with that type of, "Can I give you a lift?" as if nothing has happened. So it's like they don't recognize that. So yeah.
And that's, I guess, one of the things I want to ask you around that is how kind of that experience has helped you, because you're now in quite a senior nursing role. I'm just curious to know how that experience has shaped you as a leader now.
As a leader, it's made me incredibly sensitive to the team around me, to junior people, especially for our grads and our students, how much they need to be protected, how much they need to be shaped. I had a situation the other day where a student has come to me who felt very uncomfortable about the way that she was spoken to, and good on her that she did that. And I thought that was a wonderful step in a direction of evolution from what most students would have done back in the day with myself. We just sucked it up. So what I'd done was I sat and I spoke with her, and then we brought the person in who there was the conflict with, and we did conflict resolution. And the reason that I'm very adamant that I do that thing is that I want to make sure that all junior staff and all staff, not necessarily junior, have the tools to be able to manage to have conflict resolution. So nobody has to be in a situation that I was put in all those years ago of fear and anxiety and stress and shaking, ended up in hospital, because a lot of people have a complete lack of insight about how behaviour can affect a person, not only at work, but in their own personal life, their health. So it's a lack of recognition. So that's one thing that I talk about quite a lot. I make sure that all staff are welcomed and supported, that there's a mediation that happens, that people who are empowered, that even though I'm the manager, that it's not me going, "Hey, Eva, you messed up the other day the way you spoke to so and so." No, not at all. I say to the person who is the receiving, "Would you like to? This is how we can move forward with it." It empowers them. And by doing that, you're creating a workforce like this student who already, as a student, is not fearful of conflict resolution, who says, "No, I'm not going to be treated like that." But they have to be able to give that environment to nurture. So that's how it shaped me as a manager. It's something I feel very strongly about. I feel that if I walk up to a desk and people are having a conversation, and just one person's not involved in that conversation because the rest of the team, they're not as popular, or they don't go out with them drinking, then to me that's not a team, because that's a form of isolation. Full stop. And that's the stance that I take on it, yeah.
Because I guess that could go either way, couldn't it? Back, if you think back to anybody in the training in the second year, that experience had a profound effect on you, but it's also like a memo to self, that's not how I want to be as a qualified nurse, but equally it could have gone a different way, couldn't it, in some respects?
I think what I'll come back to you with is exactly that. You either become a bully or you're the bully, yeah. You're an abuser or the abuse, or you're being abused. And, you know, and that's historically what we know. It's the nature of the beast. It's human nature. What I will say to you is that the enrolled nurse that bullied me as a student and picked me up all those years later, a bit later in my career, I actually was inadvertently, not realising, chatting to her father-in-law. And he was talking, do you know so-and-so? Did you work? And I was going, oh, yeah, I did. And, of course, ever the cautious, because, oh, yeah, she's great. She's this. She's a wonderful daughter-in-law, da-da-da. You know, but she had a rough time. I said, what do you mean she had a rough time? So it wasn't until years later that I realised that she'd also been bullied, you know, during her training. So I think that we have an acute responsibility. We need to recognise that we are accountable for chain reactions. And I don't think sometimes that we realise the big impacts that we can make in people's future careers and in their life. So we need to be very accountable. Mm. A bit like climate change at the moment. We all need to be accountable.
Absolutely. What do you think is the most difficult part of being a nurse?
HR.
Tell me more.
Team dynamics. I think that as individual people outside of whatever career we're doing, whether we're nurses, doctors, cleaners, or whatever, it doesn't make any difference. At the end of it, we're all individuals. We're all people with human emotions. And as individuals, we all react differently. And just because you go into nursing doesn't make you a martyr. It doesn't make you, not exposed to vulnerability, of not being able to, demonstrate weaker sides of yourself. It's like all Christians don't always demonstrate Christian behaviour. So, you know, there is this martyr, this martyr thing with nurses, and I think it's sometimes to our detriment in that, you know, we've been put as these heroes, as these martyrs. You know, we absorb and we do everything and we take everything, and that's great. So I think in terms of that, when you're dealing with medical situations, when you've got such exposure to trauma, often it might not be felt at the time. It may be felt a bit later and it comes out in different ways. So the human resource side of dealing with those issues, it could be what an individual is going through, how they reflect, how they experience, or how it affects the teams, how it can fragment teams. Or if somebody internally is suffering and hasn't expressed how they're truly feeling, we all know that some people, you know, you can get snappy and snarly. And it's not that you intentionally want to be snappy and snarly. It's because you're actually saying, well, actually, what's going on inside is this. So I think that's the most tricky thing. And at the end of the day, teams are all different personalities, different cultures. They're culturally diverse in where they come from. They're culturally diverse in what class they're from, what environment they're from, what their belief systems are, you know. So there's all these cultural diversities that you bring together. And let's face it, the challenge is that most of the people you work with, you certainly wouldn't go out socialising and drinking with. So that's the biggest challenge that I have.
And are you able to share some of the practical ways that you put some of those measures into place that you've just talked about? So on a day-to-day basis, how do you foster that in the team that you lead?
Sure. So I think that the key thing, and it's not always successful, is to listen to what people want and not presume that you think you know what they want. So, you know, maybe as an individual that I would be quite happy to converse and reflect and discuss. Some team members may not feel that that is what they want to do. They may just feel that they want to sit in a quiet corner and not necessarily express what's going on at that time, and just might need time and space. So to me, is one of the things is foster is if, you know, people come to me or I can see that they're struggling and they need to go home or they need to take some time off or space. I don't question it. I don't go, oh, why do you want to go home early or what's going on here? You know, not at all. Also is to listen. We have our regular, of course, we have our regular team meetings, which is a forum of which if they want to discuss stuff, they can be open and bring things to the table. They've learnt that I have an open door policy where literally, you know, within the realms of, if somebody comes to the door, I literally stop what I'm doing and turn and go, you know, are you okay? How can I help you? Mm. And they always, which is really hard, but they always open up saying, look, I know you're really busy. And I always say, I'm always busy, but never too busy to stop. Mm. So it's reinforcing that I'm there, I'm here, I can listen, I can stop what I'm doing. But at the same token is to be realistic about that and set clear boundaries. If I have a deadline where I have to meet something, because we do sometimes, then I say, look, not right now, but give me 5 or 10 minutes, or just give me half an hour so I can loosen this up. I've a tendency to go in early in the morning as well to catch the night staff, mm-hmm. Because sometimes they don't always have a forum of discussion. So it's just giving people individual time and space to talk. And we also have CN meetings as well, you know, depending on the workload, whether they're free to come to them or whether they choose to. And I think that's the thing, is being flexible. It's not making people think that they have to come to a meeting, that we have to have those conversations, And supporting their needs through training. I mean, there's a huge cultural thing, maybe in a specialised area, that if a staff member wants to go off and do something else and it's not related to the area, then you're less likely to support it. Whereas I don't work like that at all. Mm-hmm. I feel that, you know, if a staff member has an interest in a different area and they've done as much as they've done in this area, that we should foster that, because it's maintaining their enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. So you're allowing them to go and do something that reignites that enthusiasm, that motivation. And sure as eggs are eggs, that some of what they would have learned will come back and be of benefit. Mm-hmm. May not see it initially if it's a specialised area, mm-hmm. but I think that's quite important as well.
One of the things I want to ask you, because appreciating that a nurse manager's role is not the easiest of roles these days, there's a lot of pressures in terms of, you know, the admin side of the role. You've touched on the HR processes, but there's a lot to that role. Can you share one of your personal habits or daily routines that contributes to how you maintain that balance in your life and deal with some of those pressures?
Sure. So I think first of all is that I do have a bit of philosophy generally in life. Everything's in the right place at the right time. I don't think that we can control everything, you know, and I think that's one key thing is that I've learned, is by trying to control everything and make sure that it's running tight and clear, is that can take up a lot of energy. So it's learning to let go of some of those things. It's you choose your battles. Mm-hmm. There are some that you might put a lot of energy in, but at the end of the day, is it worth putting that energy in? Is it worth waiting and just reflecting and then seeing about a different approach? So really choosing your battles in that way, I suspect, is the main thing that I do. So reflection is that I discuss and go through those professionals that I trust, and confidential scenarios, reflect on how I've managed this scenario. Can I improve on that? Take ownership of what may have been mine, but don't take ownership of the rest. I think that's another key thing. Mm. I won't take responsibility of something that I'm not responsible for in a conversation, a meeting, a discussion, an argument. I think that by doing that, you know, you lose a sense of self. You just take ownership of what you've done and then develop the rest on what you know that you haven't done.
Okay. Knowing what you know now, looking back over your nursing career, what advice would you give to a young nurse just starting out, someone perhaps just going into their training? What advice would you give them?
I think the key advice would be is do not allow yourself to be questioned and judged, to be made to feel that you don't have the capacity to do something. We all have the capacity to do things. It's just a case of learning and finding the right track and the right pathway for learning. So in other words, you know, as a junior staff that we're starting off, it's quite inevitable that you're not going to know everything. But there are lots of routes and pathways that will help give you that knowledge and confidence. Don't allow other people to stomp on you and make you feel inferior or less than what you are.
Good advice. And then the last question that I really wanted to ask you. So we've talked about your training, but we've probably missed a little bit in the middle about how you came to Australia. Maybe we should just cover a little bit around your journey from Cornwall to Australia.
Wow. Okay. So basically for me, when we were saying earlier, was there anything that you really wanted to specialise in or anything that you wanted to go down the pathway? Probably a few years into my nursing. So I went off travelling around the world in 97. So I qualified in 1990. Mm-hmm. Leading up to that, a couple of years before that, I always wanted to go off and do work in a Native American Indian reservation, something I wanted to do. And that developed into me going off and travelling around the world. And I specifically chose certain countries. So I went to Nepal, Thailand, around Asia. I went to America, obviously, because a Native American. I went to Canada. So I went to specific countries because I was interested in indigenous populations, the same as I came to New Zealand and Australia for the Māori and Aboriginal. So that had been started up. I came back from travelling around the world, back to Cornwall, and then I decided I want to go to India. So I went to India for 6 months, and I did some voluntary work in India, in Nepal, sorry, not India. I travelled around India for 6 months, then went to Nepal, did some voluntary work up in Mount Kailash, and then came back, and like that really triggered me to want to do some sort of aid work, but I just didn't know what. And then I came back and my friend Jackie said, you know, why don't you go work for Médecins Sans Frontières? And I went, I don't want to give out medicine. I want to do voluntary work. She went, no, silly. It's a French organisation, not to do with medicines. So that conversation basically developed me to want to do some international aid work, but also whet my appetite for travel. And I just knew I had to get out of Cornwall, get away. I felt quite trapped there towards the end. I wanted to go out and explore and see more. So I ended up going to New Zealand for 12 months and then to follow the pathway of working for voluntary work, aid work like MSF, you know, the infectious diseases. Mm-hmm. So I applied to work in Melbourne in the hospital there that did infectious diseases. And it was one of those sliding door moments. I'd gone back to Cornwall after New Zealand for 6 months, was applying to Australia to get to do infectious diseases, was getting nowhere, and I wanted to get back out of Cornwall and, you know, get to Australia. So in the end, I got offered a job at Charlie's, which I accepted in Neuro. That was in 2004 as I came. And then the next day, I got an email from, I can't remember if it was the Vincent's that does infectious diseases, to say that they wanted to offer a phone interview, that they'd got my references and that they were really keen to interview me. Mm-hmm. But again, that sense of doing the right thing and being loyal, I said, no, I've already accepted a job. Mm-hmm. When really deep down, I wanted to do infectious diseases, but that English loyalty, honouring your word.
Yeah.
I said, oh, no. I've already accepted a job and I'm going to do neurology, which I'd never done before in my life and was not where I was going.
Yeah.
So that sense of purpose, I think. So I ended up in neurology, which was fantastic. And the ward I worked on, the hospital was amazing. They were brilliant. They supported. And I was allowed to go off and do several different things. Mm-hmm. Worked at the Anita Clayton Clinic for 3 months as a TB case manager. Yeah. And then that set me up to then working to an international aid organisation, which was Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, which wasn't giving medicines out, was travelling around the world doing international aid work. So, yeah, so that was my pathway and journey to Australia. Yeah. So that is my other great passion. It's me, of course, is international aid work. Yeah.
Do you miss that?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I do miss it. And I think that with the different environments that you work, when the focus is very much on the patient and there's a lot going on, there's less space for discussion and being discontent. And I think doing international aid work, you really are seeing things at the rawest. You know, any of us, when we watch a TV program where, say, for example, in New Zealand right now, you've had a natural disaster. There's people that are involved that are dying. We've got the fires on the East Coast. We've got the fires here up north now that are just happening. And I'm pretty sure all of us here are not focusing about, somebody that's upset us at work. We're focusing on, how lucky are we? So the focus comes back to self.
Yeah.
You realise how lucky you are. You're very much in that here and now. Whereas sometimes I think when you're doing everyday work and it's a routine thing, and maybe things aren't quite like that. You see people at their worst, you've more tendency to drift off what it's about. I feel, yeah.
Where did that passion come from for wanting to understand Indigenous cultures?
What I would say, it depends on your beliefs, I guess. I just always felt an innate strong connection towards other cultures. Probably those cultures that are, so for example, Native American, I'd always been very attracted to that. I can't tell you where, ever since a little child. I remember as a little kid, I was playing cowboys and Indians, and I'd always be the Indian. I do a lot of role play as an Indian, like little fight scenes and things.
Yeah.
I always used to watch the cowboy and Indian movies. And so I always had a strong passion towards Native American. And I think intriguingly enough, I mean, it depends also on your spiritual beliefs. I mean, my niece at about 4 years old was looking at a Native American book, and she was looking in this book and she pointed to an Indian sat on horseback. And then she pointed to a little girl sat on horseback, and the adult Indian, she said, "Oh, Auntie Janie," she said, "that's you." I went, "Is it?" And she went, "And that's me." I went, "Oh, is it?" And I said, like, it was a male Native American Indian. I thought, there's no way, that I looked like that, even though I had short hair at the time. No way. And I remember saying to her, "What part of that Indian makes you think that's me?" And I just remember she put her hand across the picture, covered the nose, and she said, "That Auntie Jane, the eyes."
So I said
"The eyes," and she went, "Yeah." And I just remember looking at her going, "Yep, the eyes are the doorway to the soul."
Yeah.
So I think, you could arguably say that it's just a keenness through watching movies that I developed. You could say that it's something in my past historically that I've got a link and connection with. Depends where you come from. But I've always had an innate strong sense of. And I remember watching the Walkabout movie with Jenny Agutterin. Remember, it's the 70s movie. Yeah. And I remember watching that when I was very young. And I just remember I watched it a couple of times actually thinking, wow, just I wanted to go to that country. Mm. So when I was very young, I used to watch these things and wanted to go and witness them, yeah, for sure. And I love people. That. I know.
And some more.
a bit more. There are a few people when they ask, "What have you done?" I'll have somebody stood next to me who knows and said, "Oh, God, that's another 15, 20 minutes gone."
But it's fascinating, isn't it, how people arrive at, just listening to your kind of story and where you started off doing your nurse training in Cornwall to where you are now and all those things that you've done. Would you honestly have thought way back then as a second year student, fast forward, that you would have done all those things?
No, not at all. Because I wasn't sure I was going to stay in nursing because I nearly got kicked out of nursing.
The duty bits now. I'm joking.
Well, it was, and I guess that's another sliding door moment. I mean, it was a situation, I was a student nurse. I was surprisingly incredibly outgoing, very energetic, probably a little bit wild. I was the first to do everything and anything and out there and, obviously the party and the wild side. So I was very, just full on, like a child, an ADH child. I was just like there. But luckily for me, I had a third year student, I had a wonderful, and I think this is quite important to touch upon, and it's one of the key things that shaped who I was. Mm. I had a what we would call a ward sister, matron, and she was a northerner from up north of England, called a spade a spade. And I was a third year student on her ward. She was very aware of my wild reputation.
Mm.
And it was a surgical ward. It was an elite creme de la creme ward. It was well respected and well known. And she just moulded me. She moulded the professional. She almost saw what direction I could go in, and she helped mentor and support me. It was a very calming and very clear. And she offered me a job on her ward. And I remember the director at the time come up to me and just say, "Martin, I don't know why she's giving you a job, but she has. I wouldn't have you, but hey." And that's how they used to talk to you. And I was like, oh, my God, And I remember walking down the ward, and she was stood in the middle of the ward. It was the old Nightingale wards. And she just looked at me and she went, "Well," and I went, "Oh, sister." She was like nearly 6 foot, probably not quite. And I just remember looking at her. She just looked me straight in the eye and she said, "Don't let me down." And I went, "I won't, sister." and that was it. And so she came into my life at a time which was absolutely correct for my career pathway. It was for sure. So she helped mentor who I was. But at the same token, there was another ward sister who supported me when I went through a patch, where, as I say, I nearly left nursing, or was nearly asked to leave nursing by inadvertently, accidentally setting off a fire alarm for the hospital after a few drinks coming out of the social club. And they just swapped it from glass to, that push
thing.
And of course, when you've been drinking, your sense of touch isn't good. And we were investigating it. So, look, I guess it's a reminder how quickly things can be taken away and how mindful you need to be. But it was a wake-up call for me. I just remember getting called into the office. The director of nursing was there. The chief officer from the fire brigade was there. Everybody was there saying, "Hey, look, you get prosecuted.
Yeah,
that's it." But it wasn't till years later that I realised that they were never going to do that.
No.
It was just that they was doing a gentle reminder.
Yeah.
So I think those were two clear defining moments in my career and who I was.
Yeah.
And I think recognising how easy, the key thing I came from that was, is how easy it can make a mistake without intention, but not to judge, but to help support. You have several pathways for that. People make mistakes, you don't judge them, you support them and you develop them, and then hey, look, see where they're at. And you say, did you think that you would end up doing all this? And what I would say to you is that probably about 7 years ago I arranged a big reunion, a hospital reunion, and I met some of our tutors and some of the ward sisters there. I was chatting to one and I said, "Well, I never thought I'd end up doing this." She looked at me and she said, "No, we thought you would. We didn't see you staying here at all." So what I thought and what they saw was two different things. For sure. Yeah.
And I guess that's the value of mentorship, isn't it? What you've just described there.
I think that's why it's very important to mention. Yeah. Absolutely.
Saw that in you.
Absolutely.
And cultivated it, even though you didn't see that yourself at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing to mention was is that when I was mentored and supported, that was great. But I then went the other way in that I then wanted to be, Within 5 years, I wanted to be the ward sister. I said, you know, 5 years' time, I'm going to be a ward sister. Because then I felt I had to prove myself. I had to prove that I had the capacity. I had to prove that I, you know, that I wasn't this wild thing, you know, that I could do stuff, which was great. But then I went the opposite way.
Yeah.
And then I go back to the chance meeting for the ward sister who was in my second year. My second year obviously keeps coming up. My student nurse, I've mentioned it three times now. So it was, that was obviously defining moments for me, mid-career. And she supported me at that time, and I didn't know if I was going to get kicked out of nurse, and I came to her ward. She said, look, you know, don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. And she reassured me, and she was great. But a few years later, just before my 30th birthday, when I was heading towards this ward sister thing and I was going to buy a bigger house and stay where I was doing, I bumped into her in the stairs and I said, oh, you know, thank you, sister, blah, blah, blah. This is what I'm going to do. And I remember she turned to me and I told her at this reunion and I said, well, it was you that triggered me to do this. It was you that got me on that path again. So she just looked at me and she said, Don't forget who you are, Jane. Don't forget that second year student nurse who wanted to go and see the world, that had so much passion and light and wanted to get out there and do it. She said, don't forget that person. And again, I just looked at her and I went, thank you, sister. Because that's what we, you know. And not long afterwards, I actually had a car accident. It was a badger. And literally my life flashed before me and that was it. I said, nah, life's too short. And then I promptly requested 12 months unpaid leave and went off around the world. Yeah, that's what I did. And then that was it. So from the age of 30 till 2 or 3 years ago, it's been non-stop travelling doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't talked about regional either, nursing.
That's probably for another episode.
No, seriously, going back, mentorship is incredibly important. Reflection is incredibly important. Being non-judgmental, recognizing that how fragile our workforce is, not just junior and students, but as a rule, nurturing us, each other, is the most important thing. And those are the key things, I think, for me. Yeah, for sure.
What would you most like to be remembered for in your career?
I'd like to say my jokes, but they fall a bit flat sometimes. Sometimes I find I'm the only one laughing at them. But joking aside, I think probably my passion, my energy, my ability, I think, to make anybody feel comfortable and welcome, to nurture and encourage, I think would be the key things that I would like to be remembered for. Yeah. Those are the main things.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing your story, because I think that's fascinating. There's so many aspects to that. We've talked for nearly 50 minutes and we could probably talk for another 50 minutes. But as I say, that's probably for another episode. But I really want to thank you for sharing your story today, Jane. It's fascinating, and I'm sure people listening will find it fascinating.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
You're welcome.